Droughts here, floods there, global warming everywhere. The weather, it seems, is going wild, which leads us to ask, how will we grow our food if the weather does indeed go wild?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 549th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Yokohama who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I'm Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Dave Michaels on the boards. Hello, Dave.
Glad to be here.
Producer Parmalee Taff on
Good
sales.
Morning.
Hello. Carol Stafford is out there on the phones. Hello, Carol. And hey, today's show is produced by Emmy Award-winning Regina Sinski. Say hello, Regina.
Hello.
Folks, we've got droughts here and floods there, and we're told global warming everywhere. Our weather, it seems, really is going wild. And so today we pause to ask, what will happen to agriculture if the weather does go wild? Here today to help us explore the question, we have David Friedberg, who is the CEO of Weatherbill. David, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thanks. Good morning.
So so you went from Google, from found one of the co-founders of Google, to founding a new company called Weatherbill. What on earth made you make that leap?
Realized a number of years ago that the weather actually has quite an impact on a broad range of businesses, agriculture in particular. And for a good number of years, I'd say 5 or 6, we always sort of thought, well, maybe there's something, some sort of business opportunity out there, something that can be done about it. And it was about 2 years ago that I actually learned about these financial instruments known as weather derivatives. And we began sort of toying, when I say we, I speak about my co-founder and myself, he was also at Google with me, began sort of toying with the idea of maybe we can make weather derivatives accessible and usable by putting them online and letting anyone go to a website and type in the weather conditions that hurt their business and maybe protect themselves and buy a weather derivative directly online. And that's sort of how the idea got started, and we started putting together some mathematical models and so on to help us do this in an automated way, and we got to where we are today.
So this is pure math, isn't it? We're talking actuarials, right? Actuarials.
That's right. There's a lot of math behind it. We thought that it would be important to make weather derivatives useful and accessible to everyone, that someone could go to a website and automatically and instantly get a price for a weather derivative to protect their business.
So if anybody should know what's going on in the weather, it should be somebody who's working with the actuarials. You should have that incredible look at what weather has been doing for many, many years because you're betting on what it's going to do tomorrow.
That's right.
Cool. Who pays the way? I always ask that question.
Who pays the way?
Yeah, who funds your company? Who,
sure. So we have a number of local, when I say local, I mean, you know, Silicon Valley venture capital firms mm-hmm. that are investors, and there's a very large...
But I mean, your customers are who?
Oh, our customers are, yeah. I wish that they were paying the whole way today, but we're getting there. Our customers are generally farmers, small growers, mid-sized growers, companies that range in industries from construction to retail to travel. Mm-hmm. So we have a number of sort of outdoor travel and
so really
providers.
it's people who rely on weather and you provide a way of hedging their bets on that weather.
We work with all sorts of businesses that either look forward to good weather or are really scared of bad weather, and we help remove the risk of ideal weather conditions not happening for their business.
Okay, good. Also with us today, Michael Loik, who is an associate professor of environmental studies at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Michael, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Climate change. You actually are the person that is looking at the impact of climate change, right?
Well, I'm one of many.
One of many. How do you do that?
Well, in our particular research team, we're looking at the effect of changing snowfall patterns in the Sierra Nevada and what they mean for the ecosystems out there. And the Sierra Nevada is California's water storage system.
Right.
And so it's...
Wasn't it amazing what God made for California? It was like the perfect water storage facility.
Well, perhaps not so perfect because it doesn't provide as much water as the population demands.
Well, yes, but still a wonderful setup because the winter storms come across, they pass over the Sierra Nevadas, they precipitate, and the mountains are high enough to store that snow for a long periods of time, thus allowing for a much greater population that would probably otherwise be here.
Well, that's true, and a lot more water storage than we can provide for in our built environment, that is, the reservoirs and so on.
Okay, so you're another person, then, that looks at climate in mathematical terms, don't you?
Sure.
You're measuring.
Yeah, we look at historic patterns of snowfall measured by agencies such as the California Department of Water Resources and the LA Department of Water and Power, and we also look at tree ring records.
So we're measuring then. Good.
Yes.
That's what I'm trying to get at. Also with us today, Mike McGinnis, who's the markets editor for Agriculture Online. Mike, you there?
Yeah. Good morning.
Hey, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
So, what does a markets editor do?
Markets editor writes about the fundamentals of the markets, what drives the markets up or down. And uh-huh. I'm not a market advisor, so I don't advise anybody to buy or sell. I just try to give them information to work with to make that ultimate decision.
And, of course, when you're talking about agricultural commodities, does the weather have anything to do with that?
yeah. They're synonymous, to tell you the truth.
A little bit, right? So you're actually looking at weather in mathematical terms as well, because you're talking business, costs and returns.
Exactly. I mean, the markets will go up, 10 cents, 5 cents, go down 10 or 5 cents because of weather. Right now, we're looking at the corn market on the Chicago Board of Trade on Friday. It settled higher because of the hot, dry weather forecast that is scheduled for the Corn Belt for the next 10 days.
Right. Okay, good. So there we have three so far that are looking at weather in terms of mathematical models. Let's also go to Ron Wagner. Ron, are you there?
Good morning.
So you work with crop insurance, correct?
Yes, sir. I'm the risk manager.
Risk manager. Okay.
What we do is we help the producer transfer the risk of the farming operation, weather-related, in an economical way that they can make money.
Mm-hmm. So then you're looking at kind of weather actuarial tables in the same way that David Friedberg is, correct?
Oh.
Because you're making a bet. You're making a bet on the weather.
We have to live with the reality of what the weather does.
Mm-hmm.
So if we get the rain, right now we have too much rain in Texas, so it impedes the crops' progress or how we harvest.
Sure.
So that has an economic impact, and through this product and several other products, that's how we manage the risk.
Okay, but you're also, that means that you're looking at the weather in mathematical terms, are you not?
Absolutely. We use all the data that these guys generate, and that's where they come up with the rates, and then we come up with the products to sell to the farmers.
Okay, good. Well, we have four people here that are really looking at weather in terms of mathematical models, and that leads me to ask, are we going through climate change? We understand that... There's a bill in Congress, H.R. 254, that is pending to make a denial of global warming hate speech. So before that happens, we're going to ask you guys whether you think that the globe is warming as you see it from your mathematical models. And I'll just do it around the horn here and start with you, David Friedberg, from Weather Bill. Do you think that we're going through global warming?
I can tell you without a doubt that over the past 30 years there's a warming trend in every single city in the United States. And I'm not a scientist to speculate on the cause of that warming effect, but there is a warming trend that is noted and indisputable, really, throughout the U.S.
Okay, good. Michael Loik?
Oh, absolutely. I agree with David. I am a scientist, and the evidence is irrefutable, quite basically.
Okay, good. Mike McGinnis, markets editor, do you see global warming in the markets?
I'm not a scientist, and to tell you the truth, I'm not qualified to say that there is or not. And to go further than that, personally, I'm confused whether there is or not. I mean, we just had a huge flood in parts of Kansas that never gets flooded. We have dry conditions in some parts of the Midwest right now that are, you know, very dry and headed for, you know, drought-like conditions. So I'm confused. I'm not sure.
Okay, Ron Wagner, what do you think, yes or no?
After living in all parts of the world, I will say that we are all confused about what the weather's going to do. But one thing for certain is we're headed for adverse weather, whether it's global warming or whatever. But I do see lots of changes going on.
Okay, good. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here today. We're talking about wild weather. Is our weather really getting wild, or is it just weather being weather? We have a bunch of great guests today. David Friedberg, CBO of Weather Bill. Michael Loik, Assistant Professor of Environmental Studies, UC Santa Cruz. Mike McGinnis, Markets Editor, Agriculture Online. Ron Wagner, and the Crop Insurance Man. We will be right back. Please do stay tuned. Welcome back. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking about weather and whether weather is getting wild or not. Folks, I've been through some wild weather. I've experienced grapefruit-sized hail. Yeah, grapefruit-sized. I've steamed through a typhoon in the South China Sea. I've seen 5 feet of snow fall on Easter. And I've even been through earthquake weather in Central California. So I've been through some wild weather, but as to whether our weather today is getting wilder than it has in the past, I don't know. I am confused. And so what we're trying to do today is get to the bottom of what's happening with our weather and seeing what impact that might have on our ability to feed ourselves, which, of course, is always of prime concern when you're a hungry guy like myself. So let's talk a little bit about that. If the globe is warming, let's just grant the fact that our globe is warming or heating, as the case may be, how will that warming affect weather? Let's start with Mike. Mike,
well, we can describe the world's weather as an engine, for example, because the incoming energy from the sun that is trapped in the atmosphere, some of which radiates back out of the atmosphere, but it drives the movement of the jet streams and and the movement of high and low pressure fronts.
It's the energy
and
for weather, yeah.
That's right, and it's like a climate engine. Some people call it a climate engine. When we add carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gas, so-called greenhouse gases, to the atmosphere, and it heats the atmosphere, it traps more of that energy, then it's like stepping on the pedal, and it makes that engine rev faster.
So it makes it increases the activity then of weather then.
Anytime you add energy to a system, it's going to increase the activity.
So essentially then are the gases that we're pouring into the atmosphere from all of our activities. You know, we have a lot of activities, being ambitious people that we are. It actually turbocharges the weather system.
That's an excellent description.
So what happens to weather then?
Well, the movement of the high and low pressure systems and the jet streams, that's what it drives our weather, the storms, the rainfall, the droughts, and all of those things are produced by the movement of those high and low pressure systems. So as you step on the gas and you speed up the activity or you enhance the activity of all of that movement and that kinetic energy, then and that thermal energy, you're going to enhance the behavior of that leads to greater storms and droughts.
Well, I think it was Mike McGinnis, was it not you, that said you're kind of confused? You see droughts here, floods there, and you're not sure whether it's warming or cooling, right?
Yeah, that's right. And actually, on Friday, I just saw a report coming across the newswire that said now scientists are saying, according to the scientists in this story, that human activity is not causing global warming. And another reason why someone like me gets confused to hear, you know, Michael just explain his theory and belief and studies, and then to read a story like that on Friday, it's like, well, what is it? You know. So.
Well, let me ask you this. Let's go to David Friedberg from Weatherbill. If the globe is heating, would that explain flooding in some places and cooling in another place, or would it just mean that it's heating up everywhere?
So again, as you know, not being sort of a scientist in this realm, I'm more of a sort of, you could say I'm more of a data analyst, and
yeah.
The scientific theory goes that, you know, if there is sort of a warming trend, generally it could explain the fact that some regions you're seeing more and more rain, and some regions you're seeing less and less rain each year. And we've actually done an analysis looking at the data, the rainfall in 200 different locations throughout the U.S., and have concluded that it's amazing. In the south and southeast, there are regions that are having way above average rainfall levels than they have over the past 30
Texas,
years or
yeah.
so.
Texas is flooding.
Texas
Oklahoma
is flooding. They
flooding.
Had 9 inches in one day, last week, in fact, in Corpus Christi and a couple
of
other
regions. Florida is bone
Florida
dry.
Florida is very dry, exactly. And so it's unbelievable the change that we're seeing now relative to the historical averages. And so I'm not going to be sort of the scientist that goes out and says, well, here's the cause and the reason, but I can tell you that it is happening and that there are, in fact, more extreme weather events than we've seen in the historical record.
Well, Michael Loik, you're a scientist, a climate scientist. If our globe is heating, would that explain cooling in one place, an increase in cooling in one place, and floods here or droughts there?
Well, again, you add the energy to the system, and what it does is it increases, as David was explaining, it increases the variability.
Variability.
And the variability is really key. It's that you get more of the extreme events.
So, Ron Wegner, when you said that you don't know what's going on, but you do know it's getting weird.
Well, let me explain. We had lots of moisture going into the season for our fall crop, our wheat crop, and then during the April, Mother's Day, we got a freeze. And now we're just as wet as can be, record rainfall, and we've already exceeded our rainfall for the year.
And you're in Texas, right?
And I'm in Texas. This morning we just had an inch of rain.
An inch of rain this morning?
Yeah, and we're soaking wet here in Texas, and normally we're dry this time of year. Mm-hmm. Last year we had completely a drought, and then the year before in 2004 record rainfall, and now we're record rainfall. And what I see is there's a lot of different changes in the weather, and the storms are more violent, and in some cases it'll be cool or extremely hot. Right now we're in a cool time when it should be hot, so it is kind of confusing to see what's really happened. But the main thing is there's just more adverse weather is what we're seeing.
And everybody's nodding their heads on the radio. Yes, yes, yes. So what's causing that? Michael Loik, environmental
scientist.
Is it people and the activities that we're doing? Or
well, you know, here's the thing is when you get a record rainfall of 9 inches in Corpus Christi, There's no smoking gun or fingerprint on that says this came from somebody's tailpipe, and so we cannot say beyond a shadow of a doubt that it's because of human activities. But all of these examples of weird weather are entirely consistent with the scenarios that are generated by global warming models or climate change models. Mm-hmm. That is, the physical scientists and the biological scientists and the social scientists and that look at their fundamental knowledge and say these are the kinds of things that we would expect to see if the atmosphere had warmed up by 1 degree Celsius or 2.5 degrees Fahrenheit, and these are absolutely consistent patterns with that. So
So
it's perfectly correlated, but it's not causal.
Not a doubt in your mind, is there?
Well, I'm a scientist, so of course there has to be some.
There has to be a little bit.
5% of doubt.
Okay, so 95% certainty. Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson. We're talking wild weather. Is the weather we're having really wild, or is it just weather? And weather is weather, as we all know. With us today, we have David Friedberg, CEO of Weatherbill, a new company that is manufacturing derivatives for weather. Michael Loik, who's assistant professor of environmental studies, University of California, Santa Cruz. Mike McGinnis, markets editor at Agriculture Online. And Ron Wagner of Wagner Crop Insurance. So there's two kinds of ways of managing risk here that we have represented here today. And one is through derivatives, which is a relatively new way of doing things. And the other is the age-old way of federal crop insurance. So we're going to be talking about that a little bit later. But right now we're talking about the weather. And the question is, what do you think out there? Do you think our weather is going wild? And if so, how will we grow our food if the weather goes too wild? Right back, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We're back, and so is the weather. If you look at a weather map of the United States today, you'll see that they're drowning down in Texas and baking in Florida. And usually it's kind of the other way around, but who knows what's going on? It seems as though our weather is getting wild and getting wilder every year. And if such is the case, what kind of impact will that have on the markets for our foods? So in that regard, let's go to Mike McGinnis. Mike, you're a markets editor for Agriculture Online. Do you see any impact of wild weather on the markets for our food?
Oh, certainly, and it's happened in the last couple of years. We've been talking mainly about global warming here in the U.S., but you take a look at the wheat-producing countries around the world, and last year they had a drought, a real tough time growing wheat, lowered the supply of wheat. This year, many of the same countries are having the same problem.
Which countries are we talking about? I know Australia is having a terrible time down there.
Yeah, Australia is having a tough time. They're the countries of the Black Sea that produce a lot of wheat over there. Canada last year had a tough time with their wheat production. And then this year, again, as I mentioned, some of those same countries are having the same problem. Russia is having a tough time this year with wheat. So we're seeing wheat prices go to $6. Now, if you want to back that up a little bit or understand why that's such a concern, wheat is used as a feed source for livestock producers. Obviously, livestock producers use corn as a feed source. And corn is real high right now.
Because?
And wheat's real high. And so it's having a direct effect on livestock producers. And there doesn't seem to be any end in sight, because with the ethanol demand, the corn prices are going to stay high. There's a shortage of soy oil around the world. So soybeans are in demand, not to mention the creation of biodiesel and that popularity that's going on. So soybean prices are high as well. And let me give you an example of how high the prices are. Right now, the wheat futures contracts are up around $6.
Have they been over the last 10 years? What's 10-year average?
Ron may be able to help me here, but I'm thinking
around
$3 or $4. Yeah, $3 or $4.
So they're up 50%.
Right. And corn is considerably higher. It's trading at about close to $4. I think it's dipped down to about $3.65, $3.50 now. But anyway, break even for corn is about $2.50, and farmers for years said if they could get $3, they'd be in heaven. Now it's about $4. Beans.
So what's after heaven, by the way?
What's that?
Yeah, what's after heaven?
More farming.
More farming, okay.
But anyway, beans, in relation to prices years ago, you know, beans were roughly around $4. Now they're up around $9.
Woo!
And some say are going to 10 and maybe 11 this year because of the shorts. We planted very few, like the fewest acres of soybeans in the U.S.
Well, everybody got out of soybeans to grow corn, right?
That's right. And this extreme flip-flopping of acres is probably going to continue because as the world, whatever the world needs, the farmer is going to be able to adapt and produce that product, that crop.
If the weather isn't too wild, right?
That's right. And to take this a little further, you know, one of the things the agriculture, ag businesses are focusing on, especially the seed companies, they're seeing more drought-like conditions, so they're trying to create in the labs around the country and around the world drought-resistant seed for corn and for soybeans and maybe even for wheat. I'm not sure, but I know for corn.
Plants that grow without water, right?
That's right, or you know, fewer amounts of water.
And what about temperature as well? Doesn't that have an impact on it when we talk about the heating of the globe? Doesn't that have an impact, increased temperatures?
Yeah, the worst thing, right now the month of July is the most important month for the production, for the growing season of corn. August is the most important month for soybeans. So this extreme heat that we're having, for instance, right now in the Midwest, and we're supposed to get like up to 100 degrees, I think, this next week. That is like a kiss of death for corn, for the corn stalk. It really sucks up any moisture that's underneath the ground at all, and it wilts the leaves of the corn, and it really puts it under a lot of stress. And ultimately, the yield could be cut, so a smaller crop.
Boom. Mike Lloyd, environmental scientist with the University of California, Santa Cruz. As it heats up, we talk about moving production north or higher in the latitudes. Would that work? I mean, can we move our breadbasket up into Montana, North Dakota?
Well, it's going to require the mobilization of a lot of different resources. It's not as though the people who live in Kansas are going to pull up stakes and move to Saskatchewan. But those people in Kansas may have to consider changing crops or changing other forms of their livelihoods. And whereas in Saskatchewan, they may have to take on measures to enhance productivity.
Okay, let's go to the phones right now and talk with Gary, who has a comment. Gary, welcome to the Food Chain.
Yeah, welcome. I think it's a great subject, but I remember when I was a kid, I had a neighbor who used to listen to somebody by the name of Garner Ted Armstrong, I think it was, and every week he'd have all these catastrophes, and that's what these so-called scientists on your station sound like. I mean, they're hitting isolated places around the world consisting of 1 year, just what's happening recently, which is incredible. 30 years ago, you know, Time Magazine and everything else, we were going into global cooling. Australia is the coldest period in the last 56 years. You've got fishermen stuck in ice flows that hasn't happened in the past. So I think what they're talking about is irrelevant and unscientific when they're talking about the increase of crop prices. You've had the dollar drop 80% of its purchasing power in 2.5 years. And he's talking a 10-year period that it's doubled. So I think most of these people are into this game that's being generated for the benefit of the multinationals and the governance that wants to control human activity. And most of the people that are on this bandwagon are those being funded through the universities and have a financial interest. And I think that includes the majority of your people.
Well, let's have those people respond to what you're saying.
Sure.
Let's start with you, Rob.
Like I've said, our business, Weatherbill, is a business that removes the uncertainty of weather.
You're just working with numbers, aren't you?
And we just work with numbers. And so I'm not a scientist. I don't analyze what causes what. I can tell you that we've done a number of studies that look at 30 years of data. As you mentioned, across the entire United States, and the conclusion from all of our studies has been that there's increased uncertainty and unpredictability in rainfall and temperature throughout the United States over the last 30 years, and that just bodes well for our business. And you know, we might have a financial interest, but you know, our point as a business is to remove that risk for farmers and for other business owners.
And if you're wrong on your numbers, you lose, right?
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with that. I think you're putting your money where your mouth is. But when you're overlooking 30 years, too, it was 30 years ago that they were, you know, the panic was global cooling.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't mind anybody in the, you know, the free enterprise or even those that are subsidized that are talking about being frugal with with resources and so forth.
No,
I agree with that.
The fact remains, when you think about the global climate works in terms of decades, not in terms of months or weeks or years or days, as you've correctly pointed out. And the products that we sell help remove the risk for, let's say, up to the next year or 2 years. So we're not selling a multi-decade product.
Right back. When we get back, we're going to talk about global cooling. What happened to that? Stay tuned. Michael Olson, this is The Food Chain.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back. This is The Food Chain. What do you think, folks? Is the weather getting wild, or is it just weather being weather? We're trying to figure it out today. We've got David Friedberg, CEO of WeatherBill, a new company featuring weather derivatives. We have Michael Loik, Assistant Professor of Environmental Studies, University of California, Santa Cruz. Mike McGinnis, Market Editor, Agriculture Online, Ron Wagner, who is with Wagner Crop Insurance and has been working with federal government crop insurance for a long time. And we're going to go quickly to Richard, who has a comment on corn prices. Richard, welcome to The Food Chain.
Hello, Mike.
Yes, fire away.
Yes, I was listening a little while ago, and I heard one of your guests talking about the prices of biodiesel going up because of the cost of corn. Now, isn't that biodiesel made out of field corn? And humans would not eat field corn. You don't find field corn in the store.
No, but it's the same corn they use for animal feed.
Right, they feed it to animals, not to humans.
Right.
Because it's so big. I mean, it's massive. I mean, right, I went to the grocery store the other day, 5 years for a dollar. It used to be 20 years for a dollar. I'd gladly pay a dollar for an ear of field corn.
Yeah, Gary made an interesting point, and with respect to the increased prices of commodities, I'd like to you guys, thank you for the call,
Richard. All right,
man. Appreciate it. And that is with respect to the price of the value of the dollar has essentially collapsed, and it's not able to buy much of anything anymore. Wouldn't the collapse of the dollar explain the increased prices of the crop commodities? Mike McGinnis?
Well, I think that enhances our exports. That makes our product cheaper around the world. That increases our exports, and that's the direct effect of a weaker dollar.
Okay. What is the relationship between weather and prices and the collapsing dollar and prices? Which do you think is causing the most increase in the cost of our commodities?
I think it's more of an economic issue, the global market, not the global warming.
Okay.
There are a lot of fundamentals that I'm sure we don't have time to get into, but I'm not sure that the weaker dollar has much to do with the weather.
Okay. Well, one thing we do seem to be agreeing on, or at least most of us, is the fact that the weather seems to be getting wilder, caused perhaps by global warming, but there's no real gun pointing at it, so we don't really know for certain, but we do know that it is getting wilder. Is that a fair comment?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I would say it's getting warmer, and we can look at things like, for example, the amount of weather-related disasters, so-called disasters, which have gone up by about a factor of 20-fold over the past several decades, which could be due largely, or could be due in part to the weather getting wilder, as you call it, and also because a lot of people are moving to coastal sites where they're more prone to floods and hurricanes and things like that.
Cool. David Friedberg, you crunch the numbers. You're a number-crunching kind of guy. You have a bunch of big, huge, giant computers in a air-conditioned space someplace, and you're dumping these numbers in. Do you think the weather is getting wilder?
Yeah, absolutely. What we call the unpredictability of weather is increasing. And what does that mean? Well, let's think about what the average range of something is every year, and that range is starting to get wider. So, for example, if you're in Iowa, what matters most to you, and you're a corn farmer, maybe what would matter most to you is the number of days where the temperature is above 95 degrees. Well, the historical average would say you should expect 2 to 3 days where the temperature crosses 95 degrees in an average year. Well, now that range is increasing to something like 2 to 7 or 2 to 8 days. As we just talked about, there's 100-degree weather expected next week.
Which is significant.
It's significant. So when we talk about is the weather getting wilder, what we think about is we think about the range of things happening. And the range is starting to get wider. And that means as a farmer or in any sort of business, if you're weather sensitive, it becomes harder to manage your business because that range is wider. It's harder to think about what you have to expect that season or that year.
Okay, good. Let's go to Ron Wagner. Ron, how do we hedge? How do farmers survive in an increasingly weird weather world?
Well, there's several ways through the technology of seeds, bio crop chemistry, and stuff like that, and also through practices, different type of farming practices, fertilizer applications, etc. The other way we do it is through companies like Weatherbill. We take that risk and we transfer it in the form of a policy or something, because that's what we're doing. We also do it with crop insurance. It's all about the dollar, whether you're in the crop insurance or you're a farmer. That's what you're out there trying to do, is make a living. And when the weather fluctuates like it does, it's not a constant thing. And if you can take something out of that formula and make it constant, then you are able to predict what your profit or your potential is. And that's where these products come into play. And I would like to commend our scientists and our researchers out there that's taking all this data and doing something with it, so we can maybe understand the dynamics of it, so that we can operate in this world that we live in with all this fluctuating weather patterns. Because it's very hard to farm right now and know what to do when the weather doesn't cooperate.
So essentially there's two ways of dealing with it. One is crop insurance, right?
Oh, correct.
And the other is through this new derivative program that Weatherbill came up with, correct?
Right. It's just
what's the difference? What's the difference between
what Weatherbill brings to the table is they've opened up a whole new realm to ag businesses. For example, if there's no crops grown because of the weather, then there's your not only your first order of effects, but your second, third, fourth order of effects. Your seed dealers, tractor dealerships, you know, you don't sell as many tractors. The money just doesn't flow through the economy.
Right.
And people need to understand that farming is the first dollar, just like oil income. That's the first dollar.
And people forgot that the most important event on Earth each year is the
harvest.
Even
though it makes up less than 2% of the population, the agriculture in the United States is second to none.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and conclude when we come back. Do stay tuned, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080.
Hi, folks. How many of you out there love to garden? Wouldn't it be nice to grow some of your own food? Or maybe a flower garden would brighten your day. Well, now you can have the pleasures of gardening without all that effort. You don't need a tractor. You don't need a rototiller. All you need is the Knox Garden Box, a heavily constructed portable elevated garden on legs that can virtually change the way you've gardened in the past. The Knox Garden Box can be set up anywhere. Yes, you can place it right on concrete. For those with bad backs, you've got critters and gophers, no space or maybe no dirt. With the Knox Garden Box, the therapy of garden is now the prescription for good mental health. The way to find your fabulous Knox Garden Box is by logging on to KnoxGardenBox.com. That's K-N-O-X, GardenBox.com. Or by calling 831-461-9430.
Welcome back. Michael Olson here. This is The Food Chain. We're talking about weird weather. And we're going to go quickly to Reggie. Reggie, welcome to The Food Chain.
Michael, how you doing?
Very good.
My question is to one of the gentlemen. Do we have 200 years of actual temperature recording for each day in the last 200 years?
David Friedberg, you're the one that's crunching numbers. What do you think?
The National Weather Service doesn't have a published, verifiable, consistent history for 200 years.
David, the question is, do we or we don't? Do we have actual 200 years of documentation?
Sure. So there are records of 200 years of temperature. That's correct. But you've got to realize sometimes the location changes over those 200 years. And so when I think as a scientist about doing a statistical analysis on data, we want to make sure that it's all consistent over 200 years.
And okay, so let me ask you this: have we used the exact same instrument to measure those 200 years of weather?
Yeah, definitely not.
So okay, where are you going with this?
Okay, wait a second. So you're telling me for the last 200 years we have documented the temperatures for the last 200 years, and we use different instruments to measure. Is that correct or not correct?
I'm going to defer to Michael on this one. I think he's done a better job.
We have used different instruments, but all of the instruments they're calibrated against one another, and they're consistent. And we have, in fact, 700,000 years of temperature data going back from various sources.
That I don't believe.
Well, it's absolutely
1,000 years.
700,000 years from ice cores in Antarctica.
What instrument did we use 7,000 years ago?
700,000 years ago, have you ever noticed in an ice cube there's little bubbles of air trapped when the ice freezes?
You're not answering the question.
Just a second, Reggie. Thanks for the call. We have to go. We're out of time. You want to quickly answer the question?
Yeah, there's ice bubbles that are trapped. There's air bubbles trapped in ice, and they form rings just like tree rings. And it's possible to drill down just like drilling through to go get oil. You can get these cores out of the Antarctic ice cap and extract the air out of those little tiny bubbles. And based on the chemical composition of the bubbles, you can determine what the temperature was.
Cool. Wow. I don't know. I'm still stumped, but I think weather is weird all the time. David Friedberg, CEO Weatherbill. How do people tune in with Weatherbill so they can find out about derivatives?
Sure. Anyone can go to weatherbill.com and use tools to help figure out how the weather is impacting your revenue and actually buy coverage online to help protect your business from the impact of uncertain weather. That's weatherbill.com.
Michael Loik, how do we access your work?
People can contact me at the Environmental Studies Department at University of California, Santa Cruz.
Good. Mike McGinnis, how do we get in touch with you?
Agriculture.com, and we have a wide variety of farmers that get on there and talk in a community and a discussion group. Feel free to do so.
Good. And also, Ron Wagner, Wagner Crop Insurance, how do we get in touch with you?
You can access my website at WagnerCrop.com, and I'll be happy to entertain any questions anybody may have.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. Folks, this has been The Food Chain. We've had a lot of fun today talking about weather, and do stay tuned for more What's Eating What Radio right here on The Food Chain next week.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen.
Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.